morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'll try to explain why these things are happening and what it means to you. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and by way of His one and only covenant. If you are rational, this will be the best part of today's program. Our numbers, if you wish to question, criticize, affirm anything I have to say, or just engage in the conversation, is 877-300-7645. I was taken aback, as was my producer, Scott, by the news this morning that not only were eight congressmen, four Democrats and four Republicans, guilty of receiving preferential treatment by a home loan company, that when it came time to investigate the malfeasance and who deserved blame for destroying the U.S. economy, these congressmen altered the subpoena powers so that they themselves could not be investigated and held accountable. What bothers me the most about this is that the American people have been led to believe that it was corporate greed that caused this last recession, when it was, in fact, government malfeasance. Government says they're going to resolve the issue when they have, in fact, made it worse. Government has said that they're going to create jobs and add to the economy when they have, in fact, robbed the economy of jobs. Government says that it's going to impose more regulations on business so that this can never happen again, when, in fact, all their regulations will do will ensure that it will happen again sooner rather than later, and that the consequences will be more grievous. The reality is that we went into this last recession because the American Congress and administrations couldn't help but try to gerrymander business, get involved in business so that they could create allegiances to themselves. The decision was made that home ownership was good, therefore home ownership should be underwritten by business. They should make business pay more for loans, make loans harder for businesses to get, so that people could more easily own homes that even they could not afford. And so the rules were changed for consumer lending for homes that gave consumers access to homes, A, with nothing down, B, with adjustable rate mortgages that as soon as the rates went up to reasonable levels, they could no longer afford those homes. And what it did is it created a environment where as soon as the rates went up, as soon as the Fed made money a little bit tighter, people could no longer afford those homes. It was a foregone conclusion that that was going to occur. In fact, it was orchestrated to occur. And when they couldn't afford the homes, they were forced to sell the homes. And when many people are forced to sell at the same time, you destroy the value of the assets. And when the value of the assets were destroyed and people had virtually no equity in those homes, all of a sudden the homes were worth less than they owed on them, and we had a catastrophe. It is exactly how the Great Depression occurred, although that was in the manipulation of loans to buy stocks. The whole thing was established by government. Government is to blame. They set the rules under which the banks were told to operate. And then to add more problems to this mess, to fight fire with more fire, the government created Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae expressly to make certain that homes that people could not afford were offered to them too cheaply, too easily, which created a scenario where there was no other option, where the conclusion was inevitable, which is the collapse that we have witnessed and the subsequent destruction and diminishment of the U.S. economy. And now the very people who orchestrated all of this, who were pulling the levers that caused the disaster, were themselves indulging themselves in the corruption that they had created, and then doing everything they could on both sides of the aisle to isolate themselves from judicial scrutiny. They are scum politicians, most all of them, both sides of the aisle. You ought not vote for the lesser of two evils. You ought not support either candidate. You ought to realize that they are corrupt. One of the things that Scott and I talked about before the show began was that if people want to engage in public service, then they should not be paid. If it's going to be considered service, you ought not be paid. If you want to run for Congress, it ought to be something you do for free. And you do it for a short period of time and then allow someone else to do it. This idea of creating career politicians. And you take a guy like Obama, who never worked a day in his life in a business, and all of a sudden now is a multimillionaire. There's something deeply troubling about that. You take George W. Bush, who failed at everything he attempted in business. Total disaster. And then all of a sudden he's a multimillionaire because he successfully runs for president. There's something deeply corrupt about our system, and it needs radical overhaul. Now on to the news of today. I had wanted today to devote this program to a review of the reality that Jews are not Torah observant. The Torah is not a Jewish document, but instead they are Talmud observant. But we're going to postpone that review a day or two because the world of Islam has erupted in mass killings once again. At least 21 people were murdered in a dozen different blasts and an additional series of shootings in civilian communities and towns all across Iraq today. Al-Qaeda's most loyal wing, this is the news agency reporting, the Islamic State of Iraq, none of that is true. The Islamic State of Iraq isn't an Al-Qaeda affiliate. They weren't guided by Osama bin Laden. They weren't founded by Osama bin Laden. They didn't even exist in Iraq prior to America's invasion of Iraq. It's just a Sunni terrorist organization. And the only commonality they have with Al-Qaeda is that the Islamic State of Iraq are fundamentalist Muslims. It said that it carried out attacks in June and July as part of a renewed offensive, but it has not claimed credit for these bombings, although the local news journalist wanted to blame someone, so he said, why not these guys? They've claimed credit for them in the past. It has been reinvigorated, and they're now talking about the Islamic State of Iraq, the Sunni terrorist organization fighting there, by the inflow of fighters and cash into neighboring Syria. Now, that is telling. What I shared with you in these last few days has been that the Mujahideen and jihadists, if you want to use the media's favorite term, the insurgents that America is now backing with money and weapons and intelligence and military assistance in Syria are exactly the same people that are bombing civilian communities in Iraq. And now, with all of the money flowing into the Sunni jihadists in Syria from the United States, from other countries, including Saudi Arabia, there is so much more money, there are so many more weapons, because Sunni Islam is fighting a surrogate war against Shia Islam, Saudi Arabia is fighting a surrogate war against Iran, and the United States a surrogate war against Russia, all in Syria. The amount of weapons that are flowing into that region from the rest of the world are now enabling more terrorism in Iraq. We are now once again in the terrorist business sponsoring it. This notion that the best way to protect lives is to make certain that in a civil war that you're arming one side and having other countries arm the other side is moronic, and yet that's what we're engaged in doing. The article continues, the Iraqi insurgents are vowing to retake territory lost during a long war with American troops. Yes, Sunnis were once in charge of Iraq. And when they were Iran's enemy. But the American invasion displaced the Sunni control of Iraq and gave Iraq to the Sunnis in Iran. And so Iraq is now part of Iran's axis of power, as is Syria, which at the time was more loyal to Iraq than it was to Iran, but now it is controlled entirely by Iran. We made a bad situation worse by our invasion. Security, the article said, has been increased ahead of the Muslim holy fasting month of Ramadan's conclusion next week. Only in Islam, when holy months are being celebrated, does one have to be wary of increased violence. And the reason is because jihad, killing in Allah's cause, is the most religious act a Muslim can do. And so during the most holy of Muslim months, we have the most heinous of Muslim behavior. In Baghdad, a car bomb killed 6 civilians and wounded 28 more in the mainly Shiite districts on Thursday. 4 car bombs exploded in the city of Kirkuk, north of Baghdad, killing 2 people and mutilating 18 more. Sunni Muslim insurgents have launched a string of attacks on Shiite targets to try to reignite, the article and journalists report, the sectarian violence that killed tens of thousands of people in 2006 and 2007. Actually killed hundreds of thousands of people. Violence that the United States enabled and instigated by its invasion of the country. In total, our invasion of Iraq led to the deaths of 900,000 Iraqis. We have that much blood on our hands. The Islamic State of Iraq insurgents have also said that their suicide bombers attacked a counter-terrorism unit in Baghdad in August to try to free prisoners held there. We will return to a sad story out of Afghanistan, also about Muslims killing, this time, infidels, when Shattering Myths returns. 877-300-7645. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. And we have many of them blended together in this next story. It is another sad day in Afghanistan. 11 people were killed after a Black Hawk helicopter carrying foreign troops and American troops crashed in southern Afghanistan, the NATO-led coalition force says. 7 of the soldiers were Americans. 4 Afghanis died in the crash. The International Security Force said the helicopter came down in the Kandahar province. The authorities are saying that they are investigating the cause of the crash. I have personally investigated the first 500,000, excuse me, the first 500, excuse my misstatement there. I investigated the first 500 American deaths in the Afghanistan war, and the first 100 deaths associated with our invasion of Afghanistan. And what I found is that in most cases, the Department of Defense lied. In most cases, the Department of Defense explanation of what occurred was untrue. Not just a little bit untrue, but usually completely untrue. If a soldier died of friendly fire, they would say that it was fighting the enemy. If a soldier died because of an accident of some sort, they would never admit it. What I found of the first 500 American soldiers killed in Iraq, that only 5 of them were actually killed by the Iraqi military that we went in to fight against and to depose. 5 of 500. The majority of them were actually killed either by friendly fire or by accidents. And if you were to add stupid decisions on behalf of the leadership telling crews carrying convoys with gasoline trucks to go down, you know, streets that were lined on both sides by Islamic jihadists to the mix, which was just absolutely suicidal, without any protection for the convoy, then you get to the vast preponderance of those who died. But the real point is that when the government says and the military says they're investigating the cause of the crash, if history proves to be the best teacher, they will lie. They do it all the time. Your military does not have a propensity to tell people the truth. If in Afghanistan, if the reports to the news had been accurate regarding the first 500 American deaths, so that Americans knew that only five of those 500 died actually fighting the Iraqi military, we would not have stayed there so long as to lose 6,000 soldiers, and nor have created the environment where 900,000 people died. But they lie. Three of the Afghans killed were members of the security forces, while one was a civilian interpreter. The Taliban said that it carried out the attack. The helicopter crashes are not uncommon in Afghanistan, where international forces depend heavily on air transport. The reason they depend heavily on air transport is because you can't use ground transport in Afghanistan, because the dirt roads that crisscross the country are all mined with improvised explosive devices. In August 2001, the Taliban shot down an American Chinook near Kabul, killing 30 Americans and 8 Afghans in the deadliest single incident for U.S. troops since the war began. We're accomplishing nothing in Afghanistan. The moment we leave Afghanistan, it will be as if we were never there. The Taliban will simply come back. It's very much like Vietnam. Once America left, other than having lost so many lives, having spilt so much money, it was as if we had never been there. The same thing is true with Afghanistan. But it isn't just that we did all of this and we continue to lose lives for nothing. It's worse than that, because by engaging in this war, America pushed many of the fundamentalist Muslims that had been in Afghanistan temporarily into Pakistan, where they have destabilized the only Islamic country currently with a full arsenal of nuclear weapons. It is about as suicidal and stupid as anything this nation has ever done. Although, to be fair, the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, as bad and misguided and suicidal as they were, nothing compares to us engaging in Syria in opposition to the Russians and Chinese. This is Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll return after the break. 877-300-7645. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we're going to continue to expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Speaking of all four of those colliding in one place, we have this story from Reuters, followed by several more. This one reads, Gulf Arab states began evacuating their citizens from Lebanon. And by the way, to call them Gulf Arab states really misses the mark. We're talking about Muslim states, Muslim fiefdoms. Almost all of the Muslim states in the Middle East are private estates. They are individual fiefdoms. They are very, very similar to the conditions that existed throughout Europe during Dark Ages, where Roman Catholicism and monarchies worked as one to create private estates named, called countries on behalf of the established religion. In this case, it's Islam, and the monarch. In this case, warlords. So these private fiefdoms throughout the Muslim world have begun evacuating their citizens from Lebanon. From Lebanon on Thursday, after kidnappings linked to Syria's civil war showed violence has begun to spread across the region torn by sectarian divisions. Now, what this is revealing is what I've been trying to share, which is that when America invaded Iraq and took Iraq away from a Sunni, albeit secular, dictator, and gave Iraq to the mullahs in Iran, Iran's power grew enormously. No longer were they fighting Iraq, but now they owned Iraq. No longer were they estranged from Syria, but they now controlled Syria. Their involvement in Lebanon, which had always been significant because of Hezbollah, which is the primary terrorist militia of the Iranians, Hezbollah had murdered the only successful Christian phalangist politician, and because of that, they controlled Lebanon by fear. And now Iran has this axis, to use their terms, and their axis now includes Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. Four nations comprised of this axis. Well, this scared the living patooties out of the OPECers, mostly Sunnis, particularly in the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the Bahrainis, and the like, because they realized that they were now extraordinarily vulnerable. And so what they did is began to provide arms to the Sunni militants and jihadists who were uprising against the Assad Shia-controlled regime. And so the Shiites that are part of Hezbollah are now taking it to the Sauds and the Qataris et al., for providing weapons in the civil war to be wielded against them by kidnapping members of the royal family in Lebanon, which is where one of the places that Muslims go to sow their wild oats. And that is what is happening here. So you're seeing this proxy war spread, not only to Iraq with the increase in suicide bombings here recently and the inflow of weapons and money to these jihadists, much of which is coming also from the United States, but also now into Lebanon. It is spreading like a cancer. This article continues to say, so a Lebanese Shiite clan seized more than 20 people in Beirut, said a Turkish hostage whose country is a key backer of Syria's mainly Sunni Muslim insurgency. By the way, that is reported constantly, that Turkey is part of the backers of the Sunni insurgency. Not necessarily true. The United States is, because Turkey is NATO, is in Turkey providing weapons, providing money to the jihadist Mujahideen in Syria. But Turkey has been very, very close allies with the al-Assad government in Syria. So that is really misleading. Nonetheless, weapons are flowing in to fight a proxy war. The powerful Shiite Mekdad family is seeking to put pressure on rebels fighting to topple Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to release clan member Hassan al-Mekdad, who has been held by the Free Syrian Army. So the Free Syrian Army, which is a group of Islamic fundamentalists, Mujahideen, jihadists, we would call them insurgents if they were in Iraq or Afghanistan, just terrorists, have kidnapped a wealthy family member of one side, so the other side is now kidnapping others. In this war wherein Islam, kidnapping is considered a good thing. Muhammad founded Islam initially on kidnapping, and when kidnapping didn't pay enough, he went into the slave trade, and when the slave trade didn't pay enough, he went into full-flung terrorism and turned the first Muslims into barbarians. The Klan has targeted Syrians it believes belongs to the FSA, the Free Syrian Army, as well as citizens of Turkey and Saudi Arabia. The earlier threat by the kidnappers to seize Saudis and Qataris to secure the release of a kinsman held by the Syrian rebels in Damascus bore ominous echoes of Lebanon's own civil war. An Arab government lost no time in urging visitors in Beirut, popular summer tourist haunts, to leave. Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Kuwait, and Bahrain all told their nationals, by the way, when you're a national of the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Kuwait, or Bahrain, or Saudi Arabia, you don't work. You're given a stipend that is paid as a result of OPEC. 100% of the work that takes place in those countries is those fiefdoms. Private estates is done by imported labor, many of whom are tortured by the citizens of those countries. And so these people are just out spending the money that is ill-gotten from OPEC on indulgences in those countries. They are pure hypocrites. But they, as I say, they indulge in prostitutes and liquor and all sorts of mayhem in Lebanon. This war is spreading. Speaking of spreading and Shia versus Sunni violence, as many as 25 Shia Muslims were forced out of a bus and then murdered at point-blank range in northern Pakistan. The killings took place in a remote mountainous area about 100 miles north of the capital of Islamabad. Perfect name. Islam is bad. As the bus was traveling to the city of Gilgit, then they say sectarian violence has killed hundreds of Pakistanis in recent years. Just Islamic violence. These are Sunni Muslims killing Shia Muslims and Shia Muslims killing Sunni Muslims. Yahweh said of Ishmael, who trotted off in the direction of Arabia, the man that Muhammad in his Quran claimed was the forefather of Islam, Yahweh said of Ishmael, that his hand will be raised against his brother, his brother's hand will be raised against him, and he will live in hostility with the whole world. If that prophecy does not read like today's newspapers, then I don't know what you would have to do to more accurately describe the nature of Sunni v. Shia violence and Islam versus the world violence. 10 to 12 people wearing army uniforms stopped the bus and wearing army uniforms, mind you, stopped the bus and forced people off. After checking their papers, they opened fire, and at least 20 people were reported to have been murdered at point-blank range. This is initial information. The final toll may go up. They are all Shias, one said. They stopped three vehicles, searched them, and picked up people in three batches of 5, 6, and 9, and then murdered them. They were all Shias. Shias and other minority communities say that those behind the violence, such as the banned Sunni organization Lashkar-e-Jhangvi, are rarely caught or punished because the Islamic terrorist organizations that emanate throughout Pakistan are actually part of the Pakistani government. They were all created and they are founded and they are funded by the Pakistani ISI. Sunni extremists, they say, and they're not extremists, they're fundamentalists. They're the furthest from being extremists. Allied to or inspired by Al-Qaeda, that is grossly misleading. All of these organizations precede Al-Qaeda. Now, they fought in Afghanistan, funded by the United States and equipped with American weapons. They fought the Great Jihad against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan. But the only connection between Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and an organization like Lashkar-e-Jhangvi is that they are all fundamentalist Muslims. That is the only thing that they share. And as fundamentalist Muslims, they are jihadists. While it is possible to be a bad Muslim and a good, peaceful person, it is impossible to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist. All good Muslims are terrorists. It's not my opinion. That is what the Quran says. Back in February, gunmen killed 18 Shia bus passengers in the same manner. And in September, Lashkar-e-Jhangvi gunmen stopped a bus in this same way and murdered 26 Shia pilgrims traveling on a bus. The attackers were reported to have checked the identity cards of all of the passengers before removing them and murdering them. I'm going to share with you something I wrote almost 10 years ago now about this terrorist organization. You'll hear initially a different name, but we'll get around very quickly to the name that was used in this article. Lashkar-e-Jabbar is the most secretive religious terrorist outfit in Pakistan, also known as Lashkar-e-Jhangvi, the Army of Jhang. We will return to this story and speak of the Army of Jhang, which is a region in Pakistan, after the break. This is Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were discussing the terrorist group, the Lashkar-e-Jhangvi, the Army of Jhang, before the last break. They are accused, they accused the Army of Muhammad's Companions, which was one of the larger Sunni terrorist organizations founded by the Pakistani government, of deviating from the ideals of Muhammad and the example of Muhammad. So they became the more pure, more fundamentalist Islamic terrorist group. They're probably the most religious of all of the Islamic terrorist groups. So the single most devoutly religious Islamic terrorist group in Pakistan has now routinely stopped buses filled with women and children and dressed in military uniforms, gets the women and children to disembark the bus, and then murders them at point-blank range. Now, I personally have some experience with this. It makes my skin crawl every time I tell this story, but bear with me a moment. I'll do my best. Right after 9/11, I wanted to meet with Al-Qaeda. I wanted to find out why they were killing us. And in the process of meeting with Al-Qaeda, I had the displeasure of meeting with a number of Islamic terrorist organizations. One was the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, which is the jihadist wing of Fatah. Fatah is the quote-unquote moderate, peaceful Palestinian political organization that we wish Israel to turn over the West Bank to. Well, I met with a colonel and two lieutenants of Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. They looked really very natty in their uniforms which had been supplied by the United States. They were carrying M16s, weapons that had been supplied by the United States. They had been trained in Virginia by the United States, and they were so proud of themselves. And so I asked them, he said, you guys are just bubbling over with enthusiasm. What on earth causes you to be so gleeful today? And this was a meeting that I had with them in a dungeon that I had been taken to for the express purpose of meeting with these Islamists. And they said, "Doe, you didn't hear the news." I said, "Well, the only news that I heard in Israel last night is on the road to Emmanuel, 12 women and children were taken off a bus and then shot at point-blank range by jihadists." And they said, "That's us. We did that." And so it proves that we are not terrorists. It proves that not all Muslims are suicide bombers. We did it with these guns. And here I just had shaken these men's hands to interview them, to try to understand why they were killing. And over the course of the next half an hour, they detailed how they went about blowing the axles off the bus, forcing the women and children to exit the bus, and then killing each of them by blowing out their brains at point-blank range. And their religion corrupted them to the point that they think that they were doing a service to their God and following the example of their prophet. It is the nature of Islam. It is how Islam corrupts. These gentlemen that are part of the Lashkar-e-Jabbar have a single goal, as did the terrorists that I met with in Israel. They want to turn the world into a theocracy. Violence is an acceptable means because the Quran orders Muslims to fight and kill until the only people left on the planet show their allegiance to Allah, who was modeled in the guise of Satan. They also, as being Sunni Muslims in this particular case, are strictly opposed to Shia Muslims, although they wish to impose Sharia law. Sharia law, Sunni Muslims aren't smart enough to recognize, was conceived entirely by Shia Muslims. In fact, the Quran is a Shia book, as are all of the Hadith collections. All of them were first committed to paper under the auspices of Shia Islam. But they have not only targeted the Shia religious community leaders, they have also targeted women. They have routinely sought to and effectively thrown acid into the faces of little girls. It is this very same terrorist organization in Pakistan that's funded by and controlled by the Pakistani government that kidnapped and murdered journalist Daniel Pearl. It's the nature of Islam. It is what Islam does to a person. The terrorists who flew planes into our buildings did not corrupt their religion. Their religion corrupted them. This is Shattering Myths. I encourage you to call. We're about to change topics and move into the word of Yahweh so that you might come to know him. Please call us, 877-300-7645.
Pharmacist Ben Fuchs believes virtually all disease states can be backtracked to digestive problems.
Deficiencies in stomach acid can affect all downstream